Have pen and paper ready for this exciting information. It's time for the Taking Notes podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce Elgort. This is about pen and paper, right?
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 164 of the Taking Notes podcast. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here with
Julian Robichaud.
I thought you were going to add a Julian Mobile Robichaud in there since we talked about some mobile stuff today with two IBMers, Chris Reckling and Rob Ingram. Is that right?
That's correct, Bruce.
Yeah
we talked about just the things that IBM is doing in the mobile space right now, especially from the collaboration side, things like Connections and SameTime and Traveler, and not only some of the rebranding that's going on, you'll notice some UI differences, but also really kind of their design approach as far as creating these applications is concerned, and the things they look for and things they try to do. And we talked about IBM WorkLite a little bit towards the end. At the very end, we also talked just a tiny bit about IBM Endpoint Management, which actually, Bruce, is a product that I wasn't familiar with at all, and I didn't realize IBM was playing in that space.
Either did I. I know they've they're big advocates of bring your own device, and again, like you said, I didn't know about it, and our listeners will now. So what else, Julian?
Yeah, I think everything else is going to be in the podcast itself. I'd hate to give too many spoilers.
Yeah. The other thing, too, that I forgot to mention is we finally got around to creating a Twitter account for the Taking Notes podcast. You know, the podcast, it hasn't been maybe as social. So if you want to follow at Taking Notes Pod on Twitter, you can find out when shows come out and what we will be recording in the future and some other fun stuff. So with that, we'll let you listen to Chris Reckling and Rob Ingram talk about IBM mobile stuff. I'd like to welcome to Taking Notes Chris Reckling. Chris, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at IBM?
Sure, Bruce. What I do is I lead the mobile design and user experience teams, and that means doing everything from designing the interactions for our mobile apps to the user research behind it and the visuals. And we work closely with the development teams to make it all happen, get it into the app stores. And I started this about, I think it was 2011 after Lotusphere, and so I've been doing that the last year and a half.
And our other guest from IBM is Rob Ingram. Rob, can you introduce yourself and tell everyone what you do at IBM?
Yeah, I'm responsible for the mobile strategy across our collaboration and social business products. What I do is I really kind of try to work across the different product managers, make sure we've got consistency of approach, platform choices, design decisions in the way Chris does, but making sure we're doing the right prioritization across the products to be consistent, and looking forward as well and working across the IBM corporation on all the other mobile stuff that's going on there.
All right, well, let's start with just kind of a brief overview or maybe a high-level view of what IBM is doing right now with mobile applications. So, Chris, let's start with you. When we talk about IBM mobile apps, what specifically are we talking about? What is the field of applications that we're looking at?
Yeah, in my area, which is in collaboration, of course, back, I guess, before 2011, we had, mostly some integration with BlackBerry phones, Windows Mobile, and various other sort of web apps for like iNotes. We have done that, as well as a Connections web app. So and then Traveler also to sync was sort of the first big hit there with that got pretty widespread adoption with smartphones. And then there was definitely a decision to increase investment in that area to really build out and the apps that we provide across the whole collaboration portfolio. So especially for Android phones and for iOS devices, so iPad and iPhone. And so that's what we started to do down in 2011, and producing Connections apps for iPhone and Android and iPad, same time chat apps, Lotus Live Meetings. Traveler for Android is the one we do ourselves, and then Traveler, of course, syncs to the iOS mail and calendar apps, and I believe that is the gamut of the portfolio there.
Yeah, the addition to that, we do a full set of capabilities for same time on iOS and Android devices, including telephony and not just the instant messaging part. And one thing if you blink, you miss it. Actually, we're working pretty rapid turnaround on new enhancements. And just in the last couple of months, we've introduced new updates for Traveler, same time meetings, IBM Connections, just to name a few things. So go get the latest stuff is probably one of the messages we want to leave you with today.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that is different about mobile is the rapid release cycles, because it's mostly a client. There are some server things that happen, but mostly a client. So we can deliver clients into the app stores sort of as soon as they're done, and that allows us to release things faster out to our customers.
Speaking of those applications that we download from the app stores, I think we've all noticed that some of the icons, well, at least almost all except, I think, for the Notes Traveler Companion or what was it? Mm-hmm. One of those has changed from orange to blue. Chris, you want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, well, one of the things that's going on is we're really starting to talk about IBM Software Group capabilities. And it's really a much better story to talk about IBM, and this is going to happen across all the different IBM software products eventually. And we had a team go out and look at what attributes we wanted to promote that for IBM. So it's simple, it's elegant, it's clean, it's modern, it looks easy to do. They focus on the content and things like that. And part of that was looking at our icon strategy, if you will. And so these designs came up, and after many iterations, and as you would expect, that's what we have now, are these the blue ones. And in some sense, it's changing orange to blue. The metaphors, like the bubble for same time and the people for traveler and so on, are the same, but I'm just trying to spruce those up a bit. And then, so that's one aspect of it, is just the icons. And, they need to be recognizable on the device. They need to, when they're on Android, it needs to look like an Android icon. When you're on iOS, it needs to look like that. And so that's really it. I like them. I like blue. So the other things that are going on sort of in across the products is you'll start to notice, especially in the mobile, because we're kind of first out the door, but in the in the Connections betas, if you've seen those for Connections 4, it's sort of going to this scheme too, that is, a dark banner on the top for navigation, and there's sort of a blue bar underneath it. In fact, you can see it on some of the IBM.com sites. So we're thinking about branding from wherever it touches the customer. So it's not just our product websites or mobile apps, but it's also if you go to IBM.com or DeveloperWorks or even internally on our own intranet, we're trying to bleed that branding into everything. So you can think of it as like an IBM One UI effort.
Well, in terms of actually sort of designing for user interaction, what are some of the the considerations you have to take when you are thinking about a mobile app versus a desktop app or something like that. What are some of the things that you try to do kind of across the board to make the apps easy to use on a mobile device? I will give this to Chris first, and then afterwards, Rob, if you want to add some stuff, then please do.
Yeah, so back before I started working on mobile, I ran a design strategy group, and that was in 2009, 2010, and we actually had, I'm sort of telling a longer story here, but one of the things we did was do a lot of research around mobile and the characteristics of mobile applications, and we came up with these mobile UX design principles, and there were 9 or 10 of them, and so these were things that I printed them out, I put them on my cube wall, and I could refer to them and sort of internalize them. But they dealt with things like focus on your core use cases. So, and what that means is figure out what people do most often, say the top 10 things, not the top 40 things. Make sure you do those well and hide the rest of it or get rid of it. So one of the things we can do with mobile is strip out a lot of the things that we deem unnecessary or you wouldn't likely do on a mobile device. So that was one key principle. The other one is to facilitate quick attention, brief interaction. So a lot of times people will have it, especially on the phone, they'll pick it up, they'll look at something, they'll, you know, hit the like button and then, you know, order their Starbucks. So, or you'll be in the airport about to get on a plane, you want to type a quick comment and go. So it's those things you got to, you really have to optimize for the tasks the user's trying to do. And get everything else out of the way. And then another thing is to really understand the platform and device guidelines. So their Apple has some really good user experience guidelines that you need to internalize. And same with Android, just recently came out, I think it was just this year, came out with a design guideline site that's really good. You know, so how do you make your app feel like it belongs on that platform? Because the user bought that device for a reason. They liked the apps on it. They liked the interactions. They got used to how it works. And if you do something completely different, that's not going to make for a happy experience. The last thing is around treating tablets different from smartphones. And it really, tablets give you more room. You can't just stick a smartphone interface on it and expect it to be good. So we've really had to rethink how tablets are designed versus the smartphone UI. So those are some of the things.
I was going to say, if I could just emphasize one thing. One of the things that differentiated IBM has done for a long time is the fact that we are not just focused on one platform and expecting customers to come to that one platform. The world has changed and devices are being bought by individuals and they expect support. So we put a lot of emphasis on the breadth of coverage here on Android and iOS and other platforms that are becoming important. And that's really a continuation of a long-term strategy of multi-platform support for desktop. But in doing that, we have, as Chris said, we have to optimize. We have to also acknowledge on the mobile devices that, you know, the environment is not necessarily the same, and the operating systems do things that are very unique and different. For example, Apple doesn't really let us do true multitasking, and they do that to conserve battery. So at the same time, we need to go rethink how we do instant messaging, because you can't just rely on it being a continuous connection. When you have that continuous connection, it may drain the battery. That's not good for the user, and then they dislike the app. So it causes us to think not only the user design, redesign the user experience, but rethink the implementation approach as well.
Yeah, you know, one thing, you know, when I've used, you know, the Connections app, the Same Time app, is that they're beautiful. They're really well done, and I think a lot of that has to do with the, you know, this quote-unquote one UI strategy that you're developing, Rob, can you tell us a little bit about like mobile One UI and, you know, how did you guys, how do you do this, number one, across different platforms, and how did, you know, what led to the actual, detailing or construction of that specification for all your mobile apps?
I'll let Chris take that one. Thanks. Yeah. This is one of the things we have focused on. And, part of it, it was pretty much, I was around when we first started the desktop One UI. So I kind of had experience on how that worked. The problem was sort of stopping and documenting things. So we did. So with my team, one of the things we did is have one person kind of look at all these patterns, kind of roughly modeling against the desktop or web One UI. What's the main navigation? What does the page look like? What do buttons look like? Stuff like that. And documenting it. And we did that in a wiki. Everybody could look at it. We had review meetings each week to kind of get us started. And some of this comes up just during, product development, where you need to make decisions, and then we roll that into other designs as well. So it takes some work to do, and we've done it. We're not completely perfect, I would say, but it's pretty close to where we want to be. And so we'll just continue to improve on it. I mean, the main things, is when you go and load an IBM app, is you want to, it should feel like an app from us. And if you load two of them, they should, share common navigation. You should be familiar. If you learn something in one, it should be the same in the other. And, things like that. So we haven't fully, this is all internal stuff that we're doing. And so it hasn't been published outside of our group yet, because wikis are kind of messy sometimes. So
yeah, I think you can see that. I mean, if you go into some of the most recent versions of the apps, you can really see, and I think you notice this almost most on the tablet, the iPad. You'll see kind of like, oh, there's these sliding panels and things kind of slide in from the side, and you can use touch and swipe to move around to do those kind of gestures. They're not just, PC type gestures. So certainly that's evolved quite a bit in the last 12 months from the very original Connections app to the most current one. You'll see that transformation almost happening in real time.
Yeah, and it's a process, to get it from design concept into product because of, development schedules and so on. But so that's why we kind of roll things out as they're ready, and it's just a continuous improvement project, I guess.
Well, let's talk about some of the cool stuff that you guys are working on, or that either just came out or is about to come out. So, Chris, like what you talked about Connections before, any really neat stuff you want to tell people about the new apps?
Yeah. The way the Connections app has evolved really was the first iteration of it back in Connections 3, when Connections 3 came out, was a website. So you went to a /mobile homepage and you logged in, and it was worked in the browsers. The first thing we did was take that and wrap it in a native control. So you had a web view inside the native control, and that's kind of your first step in creating native apps if you already have something. And then we added some device integration, so security, holding on to your credentials, and camera integration, things like that, so you can take a picture and upload it to files. The next step with these ones we just came out with in June was to start to really optimize for the device. So on iOS, mostly profiles and files
were redone so that you could do things like cache information on the device so it would load faster, because you don't have to hit the server every time you load. So for files, for example, if you go into files, you'll get your list. If you've already loaded it once, you'll get your list almost immediately, and then you can start interacting with it. Then we could also slip in other features, like you can download a file to the local device and keep it when you're offline. So those are things that are impossible or really hard to do in a web app. And so that's a cool feature in files. Of course, you can comment on things and things like that. In profiles, we also cache the information, so it will actually work when you're offline, even though we're not explicitly saying it's offline. But you can do other things with the profiles. You can do things like save the contact to your local device contacts. You can email a vCard or SMS the vCard to another person. On Android, it generates a QR code. So if you want to just hold up your phone and to somebody else and have them read the QR code, then you can do that. So there's a lot of opportunity there to make the app a lot nicer for people, so they really like using it. So that's what we're going for there.
Chris, I just have a quick question about customization of the mobile apps. I think Luis Benitez had a blog entry about customizing mobile apps. Is that possible?
Yes. So that was another challenge. We had a requirement for some customers to do a number of customizations to the app. So for example, if they call their internal deployment, say one IBM or something like that, it's not called connection. So if they train all their users to go to one IBM to get their social stuff, then and they see connections, they don't know what that is. So that's one area, one string you can change, and the mobile app will pick that up. The only limitation there is that you can't change the name on the App Store or on the device itself, so they have to know to go to connections, and then everything else would be called, say, one IBM. There's other things like policy settings. So if you don't want anybody to ever see wikis, and you can turn that off so they never see it in the mobile navigation. There's certain things you can turn off and on, like disallow downloads for files. You can say disallow saving to local contacts for profiles, things like that that allow you to customize it a little bit.
Right, so all done centrally at the connections installation, right?
Yeah, there's some config files you mess with on the server.
Okay.
And my favorite is the ability to extend the menu of items. If you've got a particular thing you want to hook in, an app or something or a link you want to hook in to the connections menu, you can do that also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can add an item at the bottom of our navigation. So our navigation has home and files, wikis, and so on. At the bottom, you can add your own. Say you have help, corporate help or something like that. You can add an entry there with a link to your own website. So that will just show in a browser inside of the Connections app.
Mm-hmm. So before I interrupted you with that question, Chris, was there something else you wanted to talk about in relation to the really cool stuff that Julian asked you about?
I'd like to talk about FinTime, because I used to be the FinTime product manager.
It's all yours, Rob.
Go right. Yeah, the coolest set of the product is used every day in my life, and I do this thing to do it. But and it used the particularly the iOS version has just been updated. The iOS meaning the iPad and iPhone version. And although the enhancements themselves were really small, I saw quite a bit of good logging about this. They add up to significant change in the user experience using it. And again, we've kind of done one of the challenges we had originally bringing this out was handling the lack of true multitasking on the platform. And we did that by essentially having to disconnect every time the same time user hit the button and switch to another app. Well, we've changed the behavior a bit here and taken maximum advantage of what can be done on the platform, what Apple allows you to do. We'll stay connected for 10 minutes. And that may not sound like a lot, but if you're just quickly changing away from the same time to look at a calendar, to check an email, looking for some information that you need to talk to chat to somebody about, it won't disconnect you. And as long as you come back into the same time, you'll be immediately still there. And even if you do leave for more than 10 minutes, the reconnect time significantly improves. So those little things that we worked on make a huge difference to the user experience. I just noticed it immediately as soon as I got the app. And yeah. Then there's a bunch of other things in the user experience that Chris worked on, and location is now supported, although there's a setting to give IT the ability to turn that off. In some regions, publishing location is not, shall we say, politically or legally correct. So we have those tools as well on the server settings.
Yeah, I'd like to also mention what we did with Traveler, because, on Traveler uses sync to sync to iOS, so we don't, as a design group, we don't control the Apple Mail. So you're just using the Apple Mail on iOS. But on Android, we have control over that. So we released with A53, I think it's upgrade pack 1, is a Traveler that's optimized for Android tablets. And so it's completely redesigned, and it really does what you expect it to do on a tablet, with the less navigation. And if you use Gmail or other mail clients on the tablet, it should be pretty familiar. And I especially like the calendar, because that has some cool things in it that's optimized, again, for the bigger screen. And so if you have Traveler, if you have Android tablets, it's worth taking a peek at.
Okay. So who wants to talk about WorkLite? We've seen in the press over the last, year, that IBM made an acquisition of a product/company who makes something called WorkLite. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, that happened back in the first part of this year, right after Lotusphere. That happened. And in fact, the product got released as an IBM product in record time, at least for IBM, it's in record time, for back in June. So just again last month, another busy month that it was for us here. So that product's available now. What it is essentially, it's a mobile application, it's a mobile enterprise application platform in the industry vernacular. And what it provides for is a mechanism that solves a particular problem, which is I'm building a mobile app, and I have to support multiple platforms. I have to support Android, I have to support iOS, I have to support BlackBerry devices and so on. And I haven't got, because of my staffing or my budget, I don't have the ability to invest infinitely on scaling up in each of these particular development environments. And so therefore, what WorkLite does is essentially helps provide a more efficient way of doing that by essentially building once set of kind of logic once, and then applying local capabilities, mobile device capabilities that are unique to the platform just where needed. So if you want to exploit the camera, the contact saving, the location, geolocation features that are part of the platform, you can integrate that in. And the nice thing about this is it really integrates nicely with an HTML story. So if a lot of your content and application logic is already built and works fine on the browser, this allows you to extend that capability pretty quickly and easily to deliver a mobile app that can be pushed out by an app store that exploits each device platform, and really streamlines the kind of build costs of getting a ton of assets out onto mobile platform. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about this is particularly it can leverage, for example, Domino X pages, mobile content, mobile controls. It can leverage the portal capabilities. It can leverage any other HTML content you built using other industry standard tools that are web tools. So really, it's a way of leveraging assets to get from web to mobile quickly.
Right, and as you said before, in the industry, this is called a MEAP, right? Mobile Enterprise Application Platform, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you're saying for WorkLite, for the most part, you take all your HTML skills, your JavaScript skills, and you can wrap whatever you have inside of whatever WorkLight packages this thing in, and then you can deploy through app stores or through your own corporate app store, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, and then there's a couple of other additional features in the platform. Design studio tooling to help you build that. We have integration with the various web servers that we have in IBM, including Domino. But importantly, we also support the platform, and we have a push notifications capability. And we're beginning to evolve and build out an application center, app store model as well with this. So if people wanted to come to us for an application store, that's an emerging part of the product as well that is there. So it's more than just a development tool. It's actually more of a set of componentry that can help you build and deploy the solution.
And it's a simple name.
Indeed, yeah. We kept the company name was called WorkLight, and we kept the product name. So,
Well, how does that product tie into XPages? I mean, when we do XPages, we're doing web development, and is there kind of a fairly simple or straightforward process for taking something like an XPages project that you've mobilized and I guess turning that into a WorkLight app?
Yeah, indeed. That's exactly the point. There is a tool called WorkLight Studio, and then there's essentially a device runtime. So this is to make it a WorkLight app, you're essentially going to integrate it with the SDK of the platform, and then we provide a kind of runtime that actually is based on the PhoneGap technology, if people are familiar with that. The runtime is PhoneGap for this, but then we have the Studio tools to help you take that HTML content and build a project that is your mobile app, and then you can choose to take that project and make it available in different device types, depending on what your target is. And so the page layout, the script logic of the app would remain whatever you built in XPages, and you really don't have to repurpose that. You can still, in fact, keep that for people who want to access the app through a browser, but then you can essentially, I want to spruce this up a bit and really add some juice to it. I want to get mobile capabilities built into it. I need to get out an app store to get it more visible. Then again, that can help do that. The developer, there's quite an extensive set of information out on the WorkLight websites that provide that, and I'm sure the people at OpenNTF as well, and Nicholas over there has been doing quite a lot of work to understand how to integrate the XPages mobile controls into that kind of environment. I believe there's even some examples out there that might help. So in general, it's not meant to be a relearning of how do you do your web app. It's meant to be an additive thing to that.
And in the case of XPages, it's going to rely upon your HTML XPages server being available. So we're not talking about an app that could be offline. That would be something like Team Studio Unplugged. So that's the way
exactly.
I understand it. So
Now, there's a certain amount of caching capability built into the runtime. So for lightweight data, but I wouldn't think it's not as quite as sophisticated as I understand it to what Team Studio can do for the things that they've converted with XPages.
Well, I guess for the developer on the street, how do we kind of take a look at some of this stuff?
The WorkLight technology, they've packaged it up in such a way as to really kind of encourage developers to go experiment with it. And I'm pretty sure that I can't remember the exact package name, but there's actually an addition of the product that's built for developers that is a no-charge development environment. The only time that the payment is due is essentially when you decide to roll out the servers and deploy the app to your users, and then you're into, you know, paying one of the various licensing models for deploying applications, which depending on if you're building one app for millions of users, there's one way of paying for it. If you're building an app that's going to be deployed to internally perhaps to a lot of users, and you're paying, then you can pay per user. So there's various licensing models, but essentially the nice thing is developers can go download the tooling that's up there and get a taste of this themselves and go experiment with it and then join the developer communities that are supporting that.
Oh, great. Well, we'll try to track down the link for that and post that in the show notes too. And then I guess for the other apps we talked about today, the connections and same time and things like that, are those things that are available from, say, Lotus Greenhouse?
Yeah, so you can, once you go to your respective app stores, you know, the Apple Store or the Google Play or the BlackBerry App Store, you can download the app, which will install it, whichever one you're interested in. And then you can point it, if you have a Greenhouse account, you can point it at Greenhouse, and it'll just work. In fact, in one of the things we're doing with the cloud is simply having a button that says, you know, launch Greenhouse, and then all you have to do is add your name and password, and then you're good to go. You don't have to configure the server or anything like that.
We're actually adding support for multiple accounts at once in the Connections app, and the same time as the Messaging app. And actually, I didn't mention it earlier, the new Same Time Meetings app that's up there as well. Again, we're moving towards supporting multiple accounts.
Yeah.
So you can essentially have your internal server, your Greenhouse server, your cloud server, whatever.
Right, and that was just one of the things that drove me crazy prior to the most recent release, you know, with the multiple accounts, right? Because I couldn't use an internal Connections or a Greenhouse. I just had to pick one or the other. So kudos on getting that into the Same Time and Connections app. So there's some webinars going on, right, about Connections, right? There's a Connections mobile tech talk coming up somewhere?
There is. I don't have the details on that, but
okay.
we'll get them for you.
Okay.
And, there's a connect. It has to do with Connections 4, and so there's going to be a tech talk talking about the new features coming, and there's some administration features also that'll be part of that mm-hmm. people will be interested in.
I think you mean Connections Next, right?
Did I say something else?
Yeah. we'll beep it out. No. All right. Rob, anything else you want to add? You know, we provided people with a lot of information today. You know, we talked about the rebranding of the orange to blue icons, the design approach that you guys take, Mobile One UI, some of the, you know, we talked about the Connections app, the Same Time app, the Traveler app, and Chris started off telling us about the larger IBM mobile strategy. Then we went on to XPages and WorkLight. Anything else, Rob, you want to add there?
Well, one other product that came out this year that some customers may be interested in, if they haven't already made the jump towards full device management. As you know, Traveler can do a certain amount of device management out of the box, but more and more, as customers go beyond just email, they want a way to manage the whole device and every other aspect and check for jailbroken and rooted devices. So there's a number of tools in the marketplace, but IBM introduced its own tooling in that space earlier this year. It is a product called IBM Endpoint Manager for mobile devices. We love our product names. But essentially what it does, it provides great support for all the key devices out there. And in addition to the things you could set, like passwords and security and VPN settings, it can actually detect and give you alerts on, you know, whether users are using iPhone features, iCloud features they shouldn't be using, and block those. It can do, like, you know, if you can't store your corporate files in the iCloud, that's a policy, you can disable it. And as I said, you can actually detect devices that have been hacked or may have been rooted or jailbroken and say, you know, my policy is that you shall not do that, so therefore we're going to block access to the device until you fix it. And all those kind of things. So that's a product that was made available in March, and maybe worth considering for companies that are looking for an IBM-branded solution in device management as well, and security is a big topic for IBM, as always.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I was just going to add that, one of the drivers across both the management that Rob's talking about, but also in our design efforts, is this BYOD, bring your own device to work concept. And so that's driving both the design, because people expect, you know, their device to work and work like they're used to, as well as sort of putting the security and management controls around it.
All right. Chris, anything else you want to add other than what you just added about the BYOB? Because I was going to say that, and then you jumped in there. But
oh, okay.
No, it's totally cool. You're the guest. Anything else?
I would just say that on my blog on IBM.com, it's called Inside Mobile Design User Experience, you'll find I've been putting a lot of stuff in there as we release products, and you'll get more details about, you know, how we think about use cases and top task and things like that. So that might be a place to go if you want to find out more.
Okay. Julian, any surprise questions for our guest you want to ask?
No surprises at all. I think that was some good stuff, because I think that especially in parts of the developer community, we haven't heard a lot about WorkLite and what that can do, and also the IBM endpoint management, which I think is really important for admins. So I'm glad we got to get those topics in as well.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for episode 164 of Taking Notes. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.